Welcome to our new show, the What Anyone Can Do podcast with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our new show picks up where the last show, Year of the Peer, left off, highlighting the simple truth that who you surround yourself with matters, and that if we enlist the support of others, give back to those who give to us, and pay it forward for the next generation, we can do anything. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari and I will interview a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you succeed in business and in life. How? By doing the things anyone can do, but most of us never will. Well, welcome back. We have been remiss in being here. It is a new year. We're deep into the new year already. Leo Battari, he's the star of the show. I'm the sidekick, Randy Cantrell. We're glad to have you here at What Anyone Can Do podcast. A lot to catch you up on. So belated Happy New Year, Leo.
Happy New Year. You know, it's good stuff, though. Been really busy, obviously, as we've been trying to pull together, you know, a lot of content that obviously we want to push out there, through the rest of the year, and not just about pushing out content, but more or less about inspiring conversations and trying to, you know, get people really, in some good dialogue about a lot of subjects that, I think are all around this notion of who you surround yourself with matters. And one of them I thought might be fun to talk about today is at the end of last year, it just ran actually just in the January, February edition of Smart Manager magazine, which is a publication out of India actually. And it was, they do a section in every issue called Mythbusters, and it's about busted myths. So it's come up with five myths out there and then, you know, tell us why they are myths and they're not reality, basically. So I thought it might be fun today to, and it was kind of a fun piece, right? Because it's kind of challenging to think about, all right, what are the things, what are these counterintuitive, you know, ideas that, you know, maybe common turns of phrase, but yet when you really examine them more closely, maybe they're not the best advice after all. And I think that that was kind of central to this. So if you want, we can kind of take them one at a time and you and I can kind of go back and forth and chat about them a little bit. We'll keep it pretty tight.
And we'll put links to the article in the show notes. So you guys listening on the podcast or watching the video, we'll link this up so that you can go and read this and dive more deeply into it. But yeah, and there's five of these, right?
Yep.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Well, the first one, of course, is if you want it done right, do it yourself. Which, you know, a lot of people take, you know, as this, you know, we've all heard that in the past, you know, that you can't really depend on anyone else. You got to step up and, you know, if you really want it handled the way you want it done, the only way to do that is to do it on your own. And, you know, when you really think about it, there's nothing more limiting in so many ways.
Severely limiting.
You know, not the least of which is, I don't know what right is most of the time. You know, right may be according to me, but there may be more right answers that are better ways to do things that if I don't involve other people and I don't get their input and involvement and engagement in it, then I'm going to be limited by what right is, number one. And secondly, I think anytime someone is usually investing all of themselves and trying to take it all in that they're going to do it and they're doing it right, they're probably not doing a whole lot of other things that they should be doing, you know? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Which creates a real issue as well. But, you know, I see it, you know, time and time again, when you look at, you know, whether it's CEOs or key executives from peer groups and talk about, the more people they can get involved, the more it expands their, you know, understanding of what right and what excellence and what, you know, I think maybe excellence is a really good word for that. What excellence looks like, you know, what is kind of redefines for them, you know, what it can be when you can get other people that can show you, when they bring their unique gifts to the table, it can make all the difference in the world. So instead of, I think, subscribing to this notion of if I want it done right, do it by myself, you know, take the time to get others involved, be clear about what it is you want, but tap into the unique talents. And I believe most of the time, you're going to get something that's better than right. You've got an actual chance there, really having something be superb.
Well, it's simple math.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's simple math. You know, I had had breakfast with a person who's got a number of direct reports. And as we were talking about some of her challenges, it was, she desperately wanted to take kind of her A team and elevate each one of them as opposed to just doing herself. You know, she felt like she was a little bit bogged down in her own just execution. To your point, doing it herself.
Right.
And, you know, it dawned on her somewhere in the middle of our conversation. It's math, right? And I said, it is math. I mean, if you get your 5A players to up their game, and now there's six of you, you're going to get an infinitely different result.
Right.
Then if you even make a quantum leap in your own particular engagement about it. So, yeah.
So the next one was, most people know what they want, right? So, I mean,
I would counterpunch that with, I think more true is most people know what they don't want.
That's exactly right. And that's Laura Goodrich has been saying that for a long time now. You see her,
yeah,
seeing red cars. She's got a book. She talks about that all the time.
Right.
People answer that question, well, what I don't want is blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And they really don't have a clue. You know, I'm teaching a course at Rutgers right now that I've been doing for a little while. It's a course really that's about how people can harness their personal brand in a way to advance their careers. And for most people, the first step, and the reason this becomes hard, is they don't know what they want to do. They don't have the slightest idea. And what's fascinating, though, is if you give people the time and the space to really think about it and to kind of shed, you know, any, you know, shyness about saying out loud, you know, what it is they're really looking to do, and you can free them to do that, it's enormously empowering. You know, I see these students, and once they get clarity around that, or at least get a little clarity, or at least directionally, what they're looking to do, I mean, it's really powerful. And obviously key to, you can't surround yourself with the best people that you can be surrounding yourself with unless you have really good, great idea about what you want, because now all of a sudden there's increased focus, right? So the more that I know of, whether, like we've talked about before, if I want to learn a language or I run a marathon, you know, that's different people I'm going to surround myself with to make that possible. All really good. But I think this idea of knowing what you want is not something we're particularly comfortable with. Robert Fritz, who did a lot of work on structural dynamics, talks about the fact that most people hold one or both beliefs that they are either powerless or unworthy. And I think it's so important that if we can shed those things, I think that can be key to freeing us to be able to say, here's what I want to do. Here are my special gifts. And here is ideally how I would like to apply them. And then to start looking for opportunities to make that possible.
But do you think, I have no way of knowing statistically as far as the number of people who feel one way versus another way, but it seems to me that it's so commonplace for us to discount our value, for us to discount those things that may be uniquely positive for us. I mean, it's easy for instance, it's hard. You can't go back and not know what you now know. And as a result, sort of discount it and think, you know, that's nothing special. Everybody knows that. But you start expanding the horizon and you realize, you know what? No, not everybody does know that.
Take this whole subject. I have people all the time that said, how did you write a book about that? Could there be anything more obvious? than surrounding yourself with the right people, right?
Yeah,
right. You know, when you really get right down to it. And they're absolutely right. That doesn't mean it's not worth talking about. And I think so many of these things fall into that category. And because...
Well, it doesn't get talked about enough is kind of our whole point.
Yeah. And because we tend to think of these things, you know, as givens or, you know, and, you know, maybe part of the issue too with a lot of folks that I think we really need to get over is this idea that if I put myself out there and I try and I don't achieve that particular goal, that somehow I've failed. And I don't want to fail myself. I don't want to fail publicly, certainly. And yet, you know, if we can embrace that idea, you know, kind of like when Ezekiel Andrews always talks about, you win some, you learn some. It's not about you win some, you lose. It's not about failing. It's not about, it's every time we may not get exactly what we want in any given moment, it's most often a cause an opportunity to learn and to pivot. And you know, I think about any great job that I thought I wanted, didn't get, and because I didn't get it, I mean, by definition, it freed me up to do the next thing that I ended up loving doing that I never would have had the opportunity to do had I gotten what I thought I wanted in the moment. And so it was
and step one may be just the mere admission or the willingness to admit that you don't know what you want or you're not even sure what you want.
Yeah,
or which is perfectly okay.
You don't know how to translate it. You know, we talk
about,
you know, Tina Martini, you know, as we've had in the podcast, as you know, a couple times, and you know, she's an intellectual properties attorney. Well, my guess is, you know, when she was five, you know, she didn't even know what that was.
Right. Yeah.
And so this idea of understanding our gifts, but constantly being open to discovering where and how we can apply them in ways that fuel our passion, I think is kind of cool, you know? Yeah. So anyway, that was myth number two, was that this, somehow this idea, people really know what they want. I'm not sure they really do. And mostly because they just don't take the time to reflect on it. And they often don't, they just don't want to just put themselves out there, even to their own self.
Yeah.
What that looks like, you know. But anyway. Third, by the way, the myth on this thing was, we've all heard the expression, keep your eye on the prize, right? Boy, if you just keep your, you focus on that big goal out there, you do whatever, and you just stay, you know, pointed toward the North Star, boy, you are going to get there and do that. Well, I think for most people, that can be pretty poor advice because we don't have a lot of patience, you know, for waiting the amount of time it often takes us to reach, you know, really big goals. And if we don't have things along the way that allow us to declare victory and celebrate, we're not really going to make that happen. We've talked a few times in the podcast about, you know, whether it was taking my daughters to climb the mountain that day, and they're focused on the peak and they keep looking at it and it's hard and it's one foot in front of the other forever. And they look at the peak and it's no closer. And they're like, Dad, really? I mean, what are we doing up here? You know,
and, discouraging.
But yet when you start getting them focused on, get to this point, get to that point, look behind you, see your progress, you know, start figuring out ways to reframe the situation so that you can, you know, as they say, eat the elephant one bite at a time, you know, then, you know, you stand a chance of keeping the energy level and keeping everything working, you know.
Well, and there's some positive serendipity that can happen along the way too.
No doubt.
You know, if you'll be open to it, some pretty wonderful views are probably somewhere along the way.
That's right. Yep. But yet, it's really cool that when you do that and you just keep that forward progress and to your point, you know, enjoy the views, enjoy the victories that the journey provides, that it isn't just about the destination. But at the same time, the destination is pretty cool. You know, there's really nothing like the view from the top of the mountain. And the only reason you get that view is because you had to earn it, which makes it that much sweeter. But I think that, you know, again, for most of us, keeping our eye on the prize versus, you know, understanding how to take things bit by bit, you know, I think is really important.
There's a lot of conversation, you know, people get kit. There's some criticism. I mean, it's kind of a an ancillary myth as well of that not getting focused, you know, on the how, which is virtually, I think, impossible for most people. Our brains naturally go to, okay, well, how am I going to do that? And not to be so fixated on, to your point of some of our earlier conversations, and really every conversation that we've had, is there's more than one way. I mean, that whole myth number one of listening to other people and being open to, you know, it's fascinating to me that in all of our conversations, it almost always comes back to a really high degree of our willingness to be open and vulnerable, and just frankly, to be honest with ourselves and with other people.
But you know what, why that's hard in some respects is it's hard because of myth number four. Myth number four, it isn't just in and of itself horrible advice, but it other things start to be lumped into the same category. And myth number four is avoid conversations about politics and religion. I don't know about you, but any kid I know, and certainly my situation and all that, your parents were always telling you that. Yeah. I think there was a certain element of...
add money to it.
Well, you know, parents don't want their kids being questioned about these kinds of things, because then it becomes a referent. I mean, it just becomes more than anyone wants to deal with. You know,
right. So
they're just like, yeah, don't talk about that stuff. That's not good. It'll be a fight. It'll be an argument. It'll be this and that. So we never set up those conversations as opportunities to learn. It's opportunities to fight, opportunities for debate in ways that are not particularly healthy. So we don't get to learn about why someone has a certain political point of view, because we're not willing to dive into that conversation. We're not willing to understand how someone's brand of faith, you know, fits into their lives, and why it's so important to them, why it's so central to what they do, and who they are. You know, but then because of that, again, because those conversations are fodder for debate, not for learning, it starts, that circle starts to broaden, right? And you get into, how many people do you know who, they talk about Thanksgiving dinner, they have to set up ground rules about what things they can talk about and what things they can't, because they're going to have people throwing food at each other by the end of dinner.
Right. It's yeah, just, and that's family.
we have set ourselves to where all of a sudden, the emotions go, nobody's listening, everyone's just teeing up for, you know, people's, you know, brand of listening is wait for my turn to talk. Is really what that's all about. Everything's watching right. over them, and it's just, I have a point to make, and I'm going to make it right, wrong, and different. I really don't care, because you're wrong anyway.
Right. Well, we've lost our ability to disagree without being disagreeable.
Right. Oh, well, there's that, you know, for sure. I mean, it's that my beliefs are correct at the expense of any other way to look at something. You know?
Yeah, and I don't know why. And you see it, I mean, every day you see it. I mean, the Twitter wars abound. They are a real thing. We've all seen them, whether it's done between two athletes or celebrities or on whatever, on all kinds of topics. And it's like we seem to feel compelled to this myth number four, that if I'm going to disagree, I have to be disagreeable, and so must you. And so.
Oh, and not only that, but it's about ad hominem attacks. It's about, you know, I remember one of the first times I just like remember in a jarring kind of way. It was a political science class, and this conversation going on, and I was the lone person in the room, or one of them, who was advocating a certain position on whatever policy we was talking about. And one of the kids finally says, "Forget him. He's from Massachusetts. What the hell do you think he's going to think?" And I'm like, "Seriously? Like this is what we're doing here? You don't want to debate this topic on the merits. You want to just say, yeah, that guy. Forget that. You know, yeah. they're yeah. all liberals up there.
He's a liberal from Massachusetts. What does he know?
Just attack the person. You know, why not?
When you lack logic, you got to pull something out.
Yeah, and the shows, you know, whether you're watching Fox News or MSNBC, these shows become places where people, you know, mostly get lines for cocktail parties that they can throw out there. Like, their knowledge of the subject is pretty much no more than what they're spewing. But it gives them fodder just to be able to be dismissive to other people in ways that don't allow for listening and learning and understanding and real conversation about things. And if it begins with politics and religion, I think it expands oftentimes to other subjects, and I think contributes to our inability to have civil discourse and real dialogue, not just debate, about everything. And I think it sets us up pretty poorly for collaboration oftentimes, you know.
Yeah, well, hey, if you can't communicate, it's impossible to collaborate. So there's that.
So, and the final myth number five, is this article that Angela Myers, I'm sure, would, you know, love to weigh in on here. Was it, in the scheme of things, you don't really matter that much, you know? This is a big world, right? You know, we're dealing with, 7+ billion people on this planet, and it's like, you know, why are we even wasting our time having this conversation right now? Because who cares?
Who are you anyway? Yeah.
But what's fascinating to me is that I think, as Angela Myers would most certainly say, and I would agree with, is that we all have special gifts and we all bring them to the world, and hopefully we are, using them in the right ways, in the right forums. And when we do, we matter a lot. I work in these workshops, as you know, with CEO groups and key executive groups. And oftentimes, in fact, there was one meeting where CEO was talking about the fact that, hey, you know, he can't be there all the time. And it's just, it is what it is. He pays the money. It's kind of his loss and all this other stuff. And
to these meetings you're talking about.
Yeah. And I'm getting his perspective on it and all that. And I said, all right. I said, I hear you. And then I started asking the other people. I said, I forget his real name, but let's.
And there's how many people in this room, to give us some context?
About 15 people.
Okay.
So next thing you know, so I decide this could be kind of interesting. So, and like I said, let's call the CEO Bob. And I turned to one of the other members of the group and I said, tell me what's missing when Bob doesn't show up to the meeting. And then that person weighed in on all that's lost in the conversation because of Bob's unique contribution. Then I went around to about 5 or 6 other members just to make a point, and they all had the thing there. And Bob actually was astonished. He was looking at this, he had no idea, you know. And yet when we think about it in terms of, you know, we all love to listen, or I think you and I do anyway, love to listen to a good jazz ensemble. And you can't pull instruments away from it without it changing the sound. I mean, there's just no way. And once we realize that we are contributors to that overall, you know, beautiful music, you know, in many respects, whether it's a meeting or whether you are, you know, part of that ensemble or part of a great team or whatever that looks like, whatever your contribution is, matters a lot. And the more that we can kind of embrace this idea that we matter, you know, the more I think it does inspires a lot of things, you know. It inspires us, I think, to find out and to be more clear, you know, about what we want to, and to do the kinds of things that serve actually to bust all the other myths, you know, quite frankly, that we talked about today, if we're willing to do that.
Well, and if we define the scheme of things as your little corner of the world, it's interesting to me. A lot of people, you know, I want to change the world, meaning super huge impact. And that really kind of speaks to this myth as well, you know, that you don't matter, but you've got family who matter to you and you matter to them, and you've got acquaintances and you got friends like me to whom you matter and people that matter to you. You know, I lost a week ago, I lost a 75-year-old mentor of mine, and, you know, a nobody by the world standards, but a man that had known me my entire life and knew my full context, knew the whole story, and somebody that I had relied on at 61, a guy who's up the trail at 75, that's an important time gap. So the value that I got from him, priceless. There's no money. And that's just me. I'm just one guy. But, you know, so I think the context of, well, in the scheme of things, well, what is that scheme of things? There's an awful lot of people that get touched every day by all of us, some knowingly, maybe some not. The impact's there for sure.
You know, if we can make a positive difference in the lives of the people closest to us, I mean, how great is that? You know, I mean, how wonderful is that for this one life that the people around us have to live, that we can be a bright light in that life? And I think it's essential for us to really understand and think about that. And then when we say we're going to show up to some place, be there. You know, yep. Be true to our word, do the kinds of things that, you know, make us a good friend, make us a good mentor, make us that person that can really make a difference for others. And I think when we start really embracing that and doing what, you know, Angela Myers says is so natural for the 5-year-old and yet such a struggle for the grown up, I think it, imagine if we were all just understood it that way and took that attitude, what a better place, you know, the world would be, you know, so.
Well, Gary Vaynerchuk asked the question, what's the ROI of your mom?
There you go.
You know, what is the ROI of any mother, you know, that's trying to do a good job and does a good job? And, you know, your role as a grandfather now, my role as a grandfather now, I mean, what's the ROI? What's the ROI of our being granddads now, you know?
And what's the line about, you can't accomplish something that doesn't get measured or something like that? What's the specific quote there? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, are you talking about, you know, you can't improve it unless you measure it, kind of a thing, unless you quantify it?
Yeah.
And is that what you're thinking of?
Something like that.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what the quote is, but I know what you're thinking.
With this idea of having to apply metrics to everything, and to your point,
right?
The ROI of mom, how do you measure love, or how do you measure like some pretty important things in our lives that don't have metrics to them specifically, are not things that aren't important to our lives, to our companies, to a lot of things. You know, you oftentimes can't put metrics around the value of your culture, for example, or the dynamic or the, you know, the essence of a certain, you know, environment that allows people to do what they do, to achieve those other metrics, you know, that we're talking about. And yet it's why I think, you know, we're too busy sometimes, not that we don't measure a lot of the right things, you know, we certainly do, but we also don't pay attention to, you know, a lot of the things that maybe are not easily measured, but are so incredibly essential to what does get measured. And this is, I think, the difference between people who are great leaders and great CEOs and just great people, when they kind of understand what that, you know, that is all about.
Yeah. Let's catch people up on, or maybe preview people. Just, I don't know, some of your goals and aspirations. I don't mean resolutions, but some of the things that, if we fast forward over the next 10 months, and now we're at the end of 2019. You know, I didn't prep him for this, folks. So,
well, this is live. I'll tell you what I don't want.
Yeah.
What I don't want, as I'm looking at up here, I don't want to have to testify before Congress over any kind of illegal or illicit activities. And because who you surround yourself with does, I'm not being part of that. that whole crack, the whole thing. But, you know, again, I think we want to continue, I certainly want to continue to expand on the work that we're both doing and getting into the hands of more and more people, and not just here in the U.S., you know, that, you know, I'm headed to the U.K. In the second week of March, so I'll be there for about two and a half weeks. You know, working with a bunch of CEO and key executive groups there who are really interested in, they're committed to their group experience. Now they're looking for, how do we maximize that? What does that look like? How can you take us from where we think we're operating to a totally different place? And usually it's done without them doing a lot of extra anything. It's just a matter of how they take the time they're already spending and how they just, you know, use it more wisely and use it in a way that actually gets them recognizing a lot of these things that we've already talked about, you know, that they matter, and that be having clarity about who's in the room and what do they want, and how to go about helping one another make that possible, I think is, you know, really essential things. And, you know, if in most cases, when I look at these groups, now there's a lot kind of obviously to this idea of how to make these groups highly functioning. But, you know, for many of them, it's as simple as, it's almost like we've talked about when you, if you talk to like a, you know, Bill Belichick at halftime and they're losing or something, and say, what do we got to do? Well, we got to tackle and not turn the ball over. Right.
Right.
And that sounds all ridiculous, but at the same time, that is kind of key, because if you don't do those things, you know, it's not going to go so well. But I don't think when it comes to a high functioning group or team, you know, you got to show up, you know, and you got to be prepared, and you got to really be prepared to play your A game every single day. Well, this is important, but this doesn't matter, all this other stuff. I mean, it's right. Really being that person who shows up for yourself and for the other members of your team. And it can be that simple and that basic. But of course, it's that fundamental to making sure. I mean, only there can we even start to work on the kinds of things that can really help you, you know, take your group to a new level. But, you know, those things are a really good start.
Yeah.
And
now, will any of these meetings, for anybody that may be maybe listeners in the UK, or any of these things where you're going to be, are they going to be public, or all of these things going to be private things?
These are private workshops for these groups. One of the things I am going to try to do, though, I've reached out to Simon Alexander Ong, who, as you know, was you know, on the show before, wonderful guy, leads masterminds groups, great executive coach, and I think just someone who is so wise beyond his years and so far along in this whole category. I am going to try to meet with him in London when I'm there, because I think, you know, the opportunity there, I think, to learn from one another is always so great that we, you know, we'll certainly try to do that. But yeah, you know, and I'll be looking at some things, you know, some media opportunities and a few other things while I'm there too, that if they, you know, if they happen, then that will kind of help amplify, you know, some things that I'll be doing there. But, yeah, I've got some stuff in Canada later in the year, but, you know, I think by and large, it's really going to be looking at, you know, this idea of, you know, who we surround ourselves with matters, and operationalize that for people and for teams by using the people plans that we have in the book, and you know, really walk through what that looks like so that people have a tangible, you know, understanding of what that is and how they can bring it in their own lives and the lives of others.
And I'll be the hawk. I'll hawk the book. The book came out late last year, What Anyone Can Do. It is subtitled How Surrounding Yourself with the Right People Will Drive Change, Opportunity, and Personal Growth. It's a great cover, great illustrations by Ryan Follin. And if people wanted an autographed copy of this, Leo, can they do that?
Yeah. Yeah. They will. You know, no question about it. We will figure that out. No doubt.
So just contact us at Leo Battari. That's LeoBottari.com. And so if you'd like an autographed copy, feel free to, Leo will hook you up somehow, make that happen. But I'm looking forward to the year. I think it's going to be, Leo and I both ended last year. Of course, the publication of the book was a big accomplishment for Leo. That was in some parts an outgrowth of the Year of the Peer podcast and all the conversations that we had. So to the point of that last myth, in that you don't matter much, you, the audience, certainly matter. Without you guys, it's just, we're just a couple of old guys kicking the ball around here with each other. So we want you to benefit from these conversations. You can expect more of these kinds of conversations, as well as, you know, some timely interviews with some of the most prominent thought leaders that are on the planet, who are very involved in the power of the collective and this whole notion that who you surround yourself with matters. And we absolutely want to broaden the conversation and include you, the listeners. So there's a contact form over at the website. Feel free to use that and send us an email. Share your thoughts and ideas with us. And we hope to be able to elevate our game a little bit this year and somehow get you more involved as listeners. And we greatly appreciate you subscribing to the podcast, watching the videos on YouTube or wherever you happen to find them. And that's my parting shot, Leo.
Well, my parting shot will not be words from me, but more from Seiko Andrews, and I'll offer a sentiment from Ryan Folland, our cartoonist as well. Seiko, of course, says there's an incredible power that comes from surrounding yourself with communities in which you feel small among them, and they look at you like a giant, which I think is very powerful. And of course, on the lighter side, Ryan Folland likes to remind us that cartoons are people too. So with that, until next week, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. To learn more about our show and what we do, to submit questions to us, and to subscribe to What Anyone Can Do podcast, please visit our website, whatanyonecando.com. What Anyone Can Do podcast is hosted by Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Music provided by Kevin McLeod is Vibe Ace, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks for watching or listening. We hope you'll share the podcast.